bear with us for just a second as we set up this morning. Today's going to be a little bit different. I thought it's a long weekend, and Kerry's away, so I can get away with a few things that are a little bit different, and it won't get back to me unless you tell her. So it's our little secret, okay? This morning we're going to do something with the whiteboard again. I've done this a little bit once before, and I thought it'd be a great opportunity to do something a little bit more interactive. It's a long weekend, a few people are away. So today I don't want you to think about today as a sermon so much as a workshop. We're going to be talking a little bit about our topic for today. And this morning what we're going to talk about is the law. Everyone gets so excited about that this week as I've been preparing. I've been telling people what I've been talking about and what my topic is, and the universal response is, good luck. This is one of these topics when we come to talk about it in the Bible that it draws these kind of groans and these kind of, oh, we're not doing that again, are we? And one of the things that I wanted to share right up the front is when we talk about the law in the context of the Bible, it's actually something that makes my heart sing. I get really excited about this topic. And it's not just because I used to be a lawyer. That is my background. I trained to be a lawyer and I did some work in international law before I came to the idea that I wanted to be a person training for ministry and look at what that looks like for my life. I trained to be a lawyer, and so what's really fascinating as I come here and I get really excited and I've been preparing for this is the law, I think, gets a bit of a bad rap in the Old Testament when we think about this thing. It's this dry, stale piece of paper that we want to kind of read and hone into and kind of dissect it. But the heart of the law, and that's the thing I'm hoping to communicate today, and hopefully we'll get there amongst the kind of the messy bits and the tricky bits that we encounter, the heart of the law is a relationship that God is inviting us into. And the heart of the law is a response to who God is. So we don't obey the law because we're told to obey the law. We obey it because there's a context of a relationship with a loving God that says, hey, come and be a part of my family. And you go, whoa, this is so good. What can I do in response to this love that I've received? That's what we're going to be talking about. So I thought before I throw out some questions for you, I wanted to give you some fast facts that you could just have and hold on to. The law, when we talk about the law, it's the first five books of the Bible. So if you have your Bible with you, it's that chunk of the Bible, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. That's what's considered the law. Even though in those passages, we're not talking about legal codes or thou shalt not, or thou shalt, there are bits and pieces throughout that that's considered the law because it's the story of how Israel became a nation and it's the story of how Israel has been formed into a people by their God, and the invitation for them with that is to go out and to bless the world. So the law is the first five books of the Bible. The first question that we often have is the law, is it something that is individual? You'll have to excuse my terrible handwriting. Or is it something that is corporate? What do I mean by that? When we think about the law, do we consider it to be something that we have to do? Or is this something that we as the community do? Think about it in the context of our law that we have in our society. Is it something that we are required to do? Or are there community and corporate expectations upon everyone? Often I find that with the law, the problems that we face in the Old Testament when we're having a look at this and wrestling with this document that seems so old and in many cases irrelevant to our lives, we often kind of create these false dichotomies where we pit these things together. And what we're going to see today is that the answer is both and. So what we see when we encounter the law is that it's not only about our relationship with God, but it's actually about our relationship with God. It's about a community being reformed. Yes, it's about us and how we individually respond to God, but it's a response about how we as a people who have been formed by God are going to respond to him. So it's both and. But there's something really interesting about the law. We often put it and we ask, is it just about us as human beings and what we do? Or is it about how we respond to God? Is there something there that's a vertical relationship? And again, it's one of those both ends. What we see is that the law is about people, but it's also about a vertical relationship with God. And so the law has this horizontal plane where it's an invitation about how we ought to live, but it also has this horizontal plane, but it also has this vertical plane. It's about our relationship with God. And so one of the really unique things about this this piece of law is that when we come to it, what we find is that if we do something wrong in our context, in our society, what happens is the state takes up the case on behalf of everyone. What's really interesting about this group of people called the Israelites, who have been formed into a nation by their God, is that if you do something wrong in this context, what happens is you've actually harmed the relationship that you have with God. So say, for example, I was to steal from Drew. I take away... CJ, excuse me. Drew is here. I apologize. So I was... it's one of those... We'll blame it on the morning fog. No. Say I was to steal from CJ. I've wronged that relationship between CJ. But what's unique is in this place, what our God tells us is that in that context, you've actually harmed the relationship that you have with me. And so what we find in the Bible, really interestingly, is a God who takes up the case of the poor and the oppressed and the people who are on the margins of the society, and he says, you can't just go about hurting those people. You can't just go about doing whatever you like to the people who are in that low box that you would normally ignore. What you need to realize is that I have a beef with you if you go about marginalizing and oppressing them. If you go about not paying people fair wages. If you go about overcharging people for things that they haven't done right, you've got a beef with me. And what we see here is that there is a backbone to the law. So the backbone is always the relationship. There is this corporate relationship, how do we behave together as a society? But at the core of that is this relationship with God, and that's the thing that invites us out. Now, there's often a second question that we come with the law, and what we do is we ask the question, is it about our internal relationship or is it about our external relationship? And what we find often in churches is that churches tend to be really good at one or the other. So we come up with another kind of plane, right? And what happens is we ask the question, is the law about an internal relationship? Is it about what I do? Or is it about an external relationship, people with others? And so what we often find is that there are churches that sit... Another way to put it is the law moral? Is it about the moral things we do? Or is it about the social things we do? And when we encounter the law, this document, what we often find is that it's both. Which is really interesting, because in some church circles, they're really good at talking about the moral side of things. Don't commit adultery. Don't murder. Don't steal. And they harp on that. And then there are other churches over here that are really good about talking about the social justice side of things. The law is about caring for people. The law is about caring for those people who are on the fringes. The law is about inviting the people who are immigrants and migrants into our community and treating them fairly. The law is about radically treating people who are poor very differently. In fact, if we live out this law so much so, we shouldn't have poor people in our society. And often what happens is we pit these things together. Is it moral or is it social? Is it internal or is it external? And what we find again with the law is that it's neither neither. These things don't pit together, but actually it's this radical invitation. And it radically expands the law in both ways. And so it's neither red state or blue state, if you like. That's another kind of comparison that we make. It's neither Liberal or Labor. It's both and. And so what happens is this law is this radical new invitation to be a new people of God. What we find in the law is that it radically extends the moral questions. And so the idea of let's behave differently. We're a new community. We're not going to behave in a sexual way like the other people around us. We're going to behave differently. This is a different kind of context. But what we also find is this radical social invitation at the same time. Hey, come in, be a part of this society. If you're on the fringe, what you need to know is that God is closer to you than anyone else right now. And so these things that we pit together, pit against each other rather, when we see them holistically, is an invitation for everyone to come and participate. There's a third one. Is it civil or religious? This one might be a bit kind of confusing, but it's okay. We'll do this one again. Is it civil or religious? What do I mean by that? So if something's a civil law, those are the kind of things that regulate the relationship that we have between each other. So it's things like driving the right way on the road, agreeing to drive at a particular speed limit, or it might be an agreement that we don't steal, or it might be an agreement that we agree not to plagiarise someone's work, and the consequences for that are regulated here. The question, though, is the law also religious? Does it have a religious aspect to it? So does it regulate the relationship that you have with God? And the answer, often again, people seem to go, well, the law is civil, right? And so in the society that we live in, we lean very heavily into this box and we say the law has this civil relationship and it's about making our relationship with each other and the state be maintained. But what we find in this document when we come to the law is it's actually, again, one of those cases of both and. Right? And so what happens is, like I said before, if there's a problem with the law, the party that is aggrieved is God. And so God takes up the case of those people who have been most oppressed. And then at the same time, the law regulates a whole bunch of activities that are designed to give life to the community. And so it says, hey, we're going to have a bunch of feasts throughout the year. Thou shalt have fun. Right? It's this invitation into a life that's radically different than the people have experienced, right? There's this invitation about food. There's an invitation about living differently in terms of how we do our social life. It's an invitation around how we do our civil life differently. And so one of the things that we're really good at in our society is kind of picking it apart. And so if you've studied law, the first thing that you're told is the law is either public or private. And you pass them out, right? So public or private. And public law is kind of the law that we're most familiar with. So that's like criminal law or what's another example, Phil? I'm drawing blanks here this morning. Family law. There we go. That's great. So criminal law or family law. And so these are the relationships where if you're in the context of a crime committed, it'll be you and the state. And so it's not another party, right? But we also have private law, and that law is things like torts. So say, for example, I go to CJ, and what I do is I decide to, let's say I chop off his hand, right? Now, there's a criminal action there against the state, but CJ can come to me and say, you took away my hand, that's taken away my livelihood. I need to be put back in the position that I would be put in if I didn't have my hand removed, right? And so CJ can seek money from me. But what's really interesting about this kind of parsing, and then you can go further and start pulling apart each and every one of these sub things, is when we talk about the law in the context of our relationship with God, again, it's both ends. You can't pull it apart. It's this big society that's coming together and doing life together. What is this? This is really strange. This is really unusual. The last one that we often kind of struggle with when we talk about the law in the Bible is We ask the question, are they to separate out? Are they to be different? Or are they to mix with other people? Does the law call us to be radically different, or does it call us to invite people in? And so what we often find is that there are commands in the law that are contrary to a lot of other societies, and that confuses us when we read them, because we go, what is going on here? There's this invitation to be different. Don't be like them is the kind of the central pillar of the Old Testament law. Don't be like them. Be different. Don't behave that way. And the reason why you're to behave that way is not because I'm telling you that. It's because that reflects who I am. That reflects who I am as God. But at the same time, what we find is that the law is also culturally relatable. So some of the practices that we read and we wrestle with when we have a look at this, we go, that doesn't make any sense. But for people living in that time and in that place, the law makes perfect sense, because these are practices that communities around them are doing. And so the law is both an invitation to be different, but in a context and in a way that invites everyone in, and in a way that's understandable. So these practices that God is inviting these people into are not necessarily radically different. They understand what they are, and God's asking them to take a step further in that. So that's an opening kind of little bit for you to wrestle with what the law looks like. What I want you to do is I want you to get into groups of people around you. And if you're new and you don't know the people, why don't you introduce yourself to those people and just say, hey, my name's James. And I want you to ask the question, when you come and when you've heard about the law, maybe you've seen this thing, or maybe you've heard talks about this thing called the law, what are the questions that you bring to this? What are the hard bits that you go, oh, I don't know, that bit doesn't really make any sense? Or, oh, isn't there that weird bit about not eating shellfish? What's that all about? Or, yeah, there's that bit in there that talks about not mixing two kinds of garments. That doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever. Maybe you've got those kind of questions. That's a great time to have a chat about them, and then we're going to come back together. If there are other questions that you have about the law, like how does it work? What's the point of it? Why are we even behaving that way? Or what's God's purpose with the law? Those are questions to have as well. So it's an open-ended discussion I want you to have for 5 minutes about the questions that you have and the challenges that you have when you come to this thing called the law. Go. If you need any help, just raise your hand and I'm going to come around and have a bit of a chat. Don't forget to introduce yourself. And that demonstrated in the giving of the law. In this place, they encountered who God is. They knew who he was. For the early Israelites, they used the law for their children. This is how the children of Israel still today learn their ABCs. So the first thing that they read is the law. Fascinating. And what they understood was that they were to be a holy nation, called to God. When they came to these parts here that were messy and that we go, oh, they don't really make sense for the Israelites and for the first readers here, often it was that tension between being different and following something that had already existed. So one of the things that I think is quite interesting, there's verses in here about mixing garments. What's that all about? We don't do that today. How does that work when we want to follow Jesus? For them, there was a picture here of them being different in light of who they are, and that being a symbol of who they were to the rest of the nations, and saying, we're not going to cross these particular garments, we're not going to mix them together, because what we want to demonstrate to you is that we are a holy nation and that we have been called to be pure. And so it was a symbol. It's a symbol that doesn't make a lot of sense to us, but if you were to go back 3,500 years when they were encountering this, people would have understood the symbol that was being displayed here. And so there are places like this. Again, there are verses about wearing tassels. So there's another. If you've ever seen a Orthodox Jew, they will be wearing a whole bunch of tassels that are coming out of their pants. And we go, "What's that about? We don't do that. That's really strange." But again, for the people, this was a reminder of who they were, and the tassels. There were 10 strings to remind them of the 10 commandments. And so it was a visual way for them to remind themselves of who they were. Again, we go today, "Oh, this is really strange. I don't know how this fits in." But for the people 3,500 years ago, this was an expression of who they were and what they were like. It was a way of reminding them of who God was in their life. It wasn't a burden for them. So what happened? How did we get to a point where the law got really messy? How do we get to this point where it seems like for the first people who heard this law, it was a good thing. But then we get to a point where there's a tension between God's grace and God's law. How does that work? Well, what happened was the people of Israel, they rejected God. They didn't reject his laws. They rejected the relationship with God. Right? And so they no longer cared about the response to that relationship, which was them living out the law. And the law lost its life. The redemptive tones in the law got flattened. The heart of the law, the idea that you love God and that you love other people, it disappeared. That social justice wing that we talked about was completely ignored. And so the prophets, time and time again, they keep coming back to this. They go, "You've forgotten this part of the law. This is really important." The people are exiled for 70 years, and we're going to learn about that later in the year. And when they come back, everything has changed. Their whole experience of how they do this God relationship, people of Israel thing, is completely different, because this idea that they're a nation is completely shattered, and now they're a group of people living in a land that's theirs, but they're not in control of it. And so there's a group of religious zealots that come along, and we know them in the New Testament, and they're called the Pharisees. And they're convinced that the reason why the nation of Israel has lost its place amongst the people is because they haven't followed the law. And so they want to live out the law zealously. And they try their hardest. And they're going their hardest at the law. Right? Because they think, if we don't do this anymore, the same thing is going to happen and we're going to get carted off again. And we don't want that to happen. Have you noticed how fear has come into this relationship with God? The reason why they want to follow the law isn't because they love God. The reason why they want to follow the law is because they're scared they're going to lose their land. And so what we find when we come to Jesus is that the law hasn't changed. And at the same time, what I can confidently say is that the law has been changed forever. Hold that paradox just for a second. Let me say that again. The law has never changed. And at the same time, I can confidently say that the law has changed forever. How are you going with that? So, when we talk about Jesus and this relationship between law and grace, what we see in the New Testament is that Jesus comes. He never came to abolish the law. His aim isn't to get rid of it and to say, "This doesn't apply," but to fulfill it. What does that mean? What if we understood that differently? What if in Jesus Christ we saw the way that we were always meant to live? What if in the person of Jesus we encounter who we are supposed to be? What if in the person of Jesus we encounter the points that we're supposed to major on and the points that we're supposed to minor on? The things that are really important and the things that are there, but they're just not, they can't be understood unless we understand the major themes of who God is. Loving him, loving other people. This is how the person of Jesus fulfills the law. He lives it out, and he's able to do it because he has the Spirit of God that dwells in him. And this Spirit that's inside him, the person of God dwelling inside the person of Jesus, this union between God and man, means that he is able to keep the law. He's not just superhuman. Right, he's not this superhuman person. He's fully human and fully God. And in that space, in that relationship, in that union, he's able to actually live out the law in the way that it was always supposed to be lived out. And this is the invitation that we have as the people of God. We have this invitation now to live in the Spirit. Galatians 5 says this, there's no law against love. There's no law against gentleness. There's no law against patience. There's no law against kindness. This is the law that God now writes on our own hearts. We don't need to carry around tassels reminding us of this because God writes it on our hearts and says, I will remind you of what the law is. This is what it looks like. And so all of these practices that we talk about that are designed to be distinctives, are designed to set the people apart, are no longer the tassels that are designed to do that. They're no longer the points of difference. The point of difference is we have the Spirit of God that dwells richly amongst us and in us. How exciting is that? The law has never been changed, and yet it's been changed forever. And so we come to that tension of, well, is it law or is it grace? How do the two fit together? And what we see is that there isn't a distinction between one or the other. Jesus Christ has fulfilled the law, and through the Spirit, what we're now able to do is respond to it. What does that mean? What does that look like? I've got a story that I want to finish off with. This is a bit further on. Here's the story for you. I want us to think about what it looks like to live this out. An early church father called Jerome, he kept telling this story over and over again, and it was of St. John the Evangelist, the guy who writes the book of John in the New Testament. And it said that John, in his old age, when he's in his 90s, he's in the church in Ephesus, and they would cart him in, and he would briefly stand up before the community, and they would say, St. John, what is it that you want to teach us today? And he would say, little children, love one another. He would sit down, go back next Sunday. John, what would you like to teach us? Little children, love one another. If you want to know what the command is that is most mentioned in the New Testament, the command that is repeated over and over and over again, love one another. They eventually asked John, why do you keep asking this question over and over again? Why do you keep telling us the same message? He says, because it is enough. Because it is enough. There's a tension between law and grace if we want there to be a tension between those two. The reality is that in the Spirit of God, when we're invited in and when we have the Spirit of God living inside of us, the law is redeemed. It's no longer a document that condemns us. Rather, it's the response to a relationship that we have. And some of these things, we don't have to do them anymore because things have changed. Things have changed radically in our relationship and our response to God. But there might be new and other distinctives that we're called out to live out. There might be other ways that we're called to be a people of God who are set apart for Him. There might be other practices that we do today that we say, hang on a second, maybe in order to be different, we need to set ourselves apart. Maybe we don't mix our clothes and our garments anymore, but maybe we consider buying clothes at a fair trade because we say we're not actually going to support the unethical practices of child labour. And we want to pay people a living wage. Maybe that's the way that we're going to choose to be distinctive. Maybe in the question of how we give, not to just the church and the building and the institution, but how we actually are radically generous with our money. Maybe it's an invitation to be like, oh, we can be different. And actually, we can actually give generously. Or maybe it's on the question of how we do sex. And maybe we go, we can live this out differently because we want to communicate a relationship that we have that's in a mutually giving and mutually supportive relationship in what we call a covenant. That sounds really different. And so in the same way, what happens is we're invited to live differently. We're invited to be a city on a hill, a light that shares God's love and generosity to everyone. And the way that we do that may have changed, but the invitation is still the same. Come and be my people. Come and have relationship with me. And in response to that relationship, I'll give you life. And it will look different. And people will go, what is that that you have? I want some of that. You know, as a family of God and as a people of God, I think it comes right back down to, and if there was one thing I was like, this is what we need to take away as a community of God, I think it's that message that St. John gave to his church every single week. Little children, love one another. Let me say it again. Little children, love one another. One more time. Little children, love one another. If we were to live that out as a community of God, if we were to live out that law, what would that look like? What would that look like in our community? Wouldn't that be so different? Wouldn't that be a community where instead of us being separate and doing our own thing, there's a community that's loving the Lord, loving God, and loving other people? Thanks very much. I'll hand back to the team.